What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time's here.
Come with me if you want to live.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to 20th Century Geek. I'm your regular host, Scott Weatherly, and we are starting our Doctor Who saga leading up to the 200th episode. And I am joined by a special guest today. I'm joined by someone coming in from the States, not even a typical Doctor Who fan. This is someone who's coming in with a bit of a fresh opinion. Wilnona from the And I Thought Collective? I don't know. Brought to us by... I was directed to you by Tonya. Friend through the Comics in Motion group. But Wilnona, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm Wilnona Marie from the And I Thought Ladies, and we write poetry. Yeah.
And you do podcasts as well, everything. You talk to other authors as well. You write poetry, you got books on Amazon. There'll be links down below. Before we get into it, how long have you been doing that?
Oh, I was first published when I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
Around for a minute. And it took me 7 years again to, you know, reach the highlight of my publishing career of getting published again. the struggles of a young author. And then we also have like magazines, and we were the stars of a reality TV show about us. That was kind of fun. It's fun also. And I think there's one more thing. Ah, yeah. We're stars of a movie called Create, Aspire, and Inspire.
Well,
and I had an acting debut last year.
You've really been busy. Oh, that's it. That's you're covering all those bases. You've got sort of like say literary, entertainment, television. That's it. Yeah. Fantastic.
I try. You know, I have not found a casting audition for Doctor Who yet, so I haven't been able to try to audition for that.
Well, you never know. Disney's now putting in the money, so you know, there'll be more in the States. I'm sure there will be. So
oh my God, I love that though. I've always, because you see it. Never mind. I'm sure we want to talk about other things.
Well, no, we can talk about it. Let's start there because we are talking. Before we do get to that, your journey to Doctor Who then?
My Doctor Who. Everyone around me talked about Who.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I used to see it on PBS over here. And I was like, why is this weird thing that looks like it has light bulbs attached to it and people are running from it? What is that? And why? And then you immediately turn the channel because, well, it's not Disney style money that was in there yet. So, but everyone else was talking about it around me. And so I was like, let me, you know, give it a shot. And I started off with the modern day. Mm-hmm. I became a little obsessed. Like, I actually have different versions of the Who theme song on my playlist.
There's some good music. I ain't gonna lie. I've got a couple of the songs. Some of the composers have been fantastic over New Who. Yeah.
Now, I have to admit, like, when David T. Lash.
Russell T. Davis. Yeah.
I kind of fell off a bit. And then when we got Jody, I definitely fell off. I mean, I watched to catch up because mm-hmm. If you're a Who fan, you're a Who fan no matter who the Doctor is.
Yeah.
In support of the Doctor, you know, you watch. But yeah, it was that was a little rough for me. But so I stay up to date.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as you say, I think there's quite a few, those early, or even, you know, you see on PBS, you know, you've said like someone being chased by someone in paper mache with a light bulb attached to their head. I mean, that's pretty fair. That's a pretty fair representation of some of classic Who. You know, they bump into what's supposed to be a rock wall and it wobbles with the, clearly made out of cardboard or something. But new Who has been a lot more stable. But yeah, it's been even with new Who, I think it's been a bit of a, an interesting journey, like the different doctors and stuff. Which doctor did you come into then? What was, you know, when you first came in then, who was the doctor that you know, when you got your obsession?
Well, it was the greatest doctor of all time. And yes, y'all can yell at me because it's even better than Tom Baker.
Tenant.
Tenant. I even have a shirt that says 10 is greater than 11. Gallifrey. And I was like, right, Gallifreyan math. That is how that works. Because they gave us 10. And that's, I mean, honestly, when they said Tenet was coming back to just take over those four, I was hoping he was coming back for the whole season. But then again, I was listening around to some of the gossip, and I knew Tenet had other things to do. So I had heard that, you know, he had other projects. And I was like, no.
Yeah, he's you know, I remember 2005 when they were first touting it, like, you know, it was appearing on, that was doing little snow. There was I remember the first time, like, the music started on the, not because it was like a trailer, but like the BBC would do this little bit, you know, like who was coming back, and it was in sort of magazines and stuff. And you have Christopher Eccleston, the Ninth Doctor, and he does one season. And you're like, yeah, it's good, this is all right, this is okay, all right. You know, it's a bit different. He's different. He's a bit, you know, he's angry, and he's you know, he's made some choices. And then I remember that the Christmas special when Tennant took over. Yeah. And there was this, like, there's even as a country, there was almost like a sea change where everyone just went, oh, yeah, now this is what it's supposed to be. Like, this is now who. And, yeah, he really established it. And I think he's obviously the, you know, he made it an international success.
So you've heard that story, right? About, like, how Tennant got that job, right?
No, never really, possibly, but remind me, because I may not know it all.
So he, Russell, it's Russell T. Davies, right? I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I said mm-hmm. Davies, but Russell T. Davies.
Yeah.
So he's working with Russell T. Davies on Casanova.
Mm.
And then he heard that Russell T. Davies was doing Who, and he was like, I just want a small part. And eventually he came in to read, and he was like, I did the weirdest, wonkiest, like, Who I could think of. And Davies was like, okay, like, after he saw the work going on Casanova, he was like, yeah, I have a part.
So, there you go.
I was like, the best casting ever. Like, honestly, I watched Casanova over and over again. I just, I'm trying to figure out at what point the Davies be like, yeah, that's the Doctor. Which one in there is like, that's the Doctor?
Yeah. I don't know, is it because he doesn't look like he's the first real change. For Who, because you know, you may not have watched it, but obviously you've seen pictures of the original Seven Doctors. You know, you sort of, you've got your Tom Bakers and your Sylvester McCoys, and they're all these sort of like slightly older, you know, stuffy looking kind of, you know, British gentlemen. And then you get Christopher Eccleston, and he's kind of different, but not quite. He's still yeah. of that. And then Tennant's very different. And you go like, oh, okay, cool. This is Davis hitting his stride. Like, this is clearly what he wanted to do.
But I mean, even with Eccleston, like, Bad Wolf was amazing. And having Dr. Jack was amazing. You loved having Dr. Jack. I did not know that the actor that played, I did not know that the actor that played him was known for doing nudity. That was funny.
Yeah. Barrowman. What's it, Barrowman? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's just known for taking his clothes off. This is interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, do you have the body to do that, sir?
he may have done between like 2005, 2010. But yeah, I don't know. You know, age gets the better of all of us. He was renowned for, apparently, he did a lot of stage musicals and a lot of stage theatre and that thing. And apparently he was renowned for just basically walking around backstage with, you know, in all his glory, let's say.
And which is funny because, like, over here, like, he comes from the Midwest here. And it's like, we keep clothes on in the Midwest.
Yeah.
I was there last week in the Midwest. And I was like, hey. And they were like, no, that's a little too much. Pull it up. So I know we keep clothes on in the Midwest.
We shower in our clothes here. That's how we bathe.
Pretty much. And I'm like, dude, when you go back, like, does your family be like, hey, keep your clothes on?
Yeah, he probably does at home. He just, but while I'm in Britain, It's all out. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's so like when you were saying age gets the best of us, it was hilarious because like, you know, I became obsessed with the characters, you know.
Mm.
And so like watching him then play in the Arrowverse.
Yes.
I was like, is that the same person? Oh, age catches up with everybody. So yeah. I immediately go on in the Arrowverse. I went and worked out just in case.
That's true though, because yeah, I know you were in that. And also, what's funny is like, you know, for me, I've seen him in Doctor Who. He done Torchwood, you know, as Jack Harkness, and then he did Arrow, and it's such a very like he's a villain almost like in the Arrowverse and other stuff. And he's playing like trying to play a serious character, and the same as what I'm thinking, like, not only is sort of like you know, you're looking older, but I can't get out of my head that you were firstly Jack Harkness, and this, you know, you were this sort of kind of flamboyant, pansexual, kind of into sort of time traveling character, and now you're doing this. But I've also seen you in like pantomime, and I've seen you do things where you're like, yeah, this feels really like weird casting for you, but cool, go with it.
But like he made it work. Mm. I think like his most versatile work was definitely in Torchwood, and I don't know why I think that, but like he sold like every episode.
Yeah,
and then of course we have the spinoff with, oh my god, and I like I'm forgetting right now, and it's not the spinoff of Torchwood, it's the other spinoff.
The Sarah Jane Chronicles obviously came around that same
thank
time.
You. Mm. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking about. Watching that was the cutest. And then, of course, you have to go back and watch all of the things where Sarah Jane was actually the companion.
Mm.
She was such a cool companion. I mean, for the era, it felt like very, like, I can handle my own.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting, this point, because she was. Like, she was a journalist, and she was, you know, kind of she was with Tom Baker, and so he's quite a dominant personality, but she still stands out as a, you know, a noted companion. And, you know, I sort of really like the Sarah Jane Chronicles. It was a kid show. It was on the kid show, but it was really well done and kind of dark at times. I mean, it had some moments. But yeah, it did. So I think one of the things that Russell T. Davis did that I liked and I admired was he had admiration for the past, and he wasn't going to be like, oh, we're not dumping it all. But he wasn't also beholden to it. So you'd be like, you can watch the episode with Sarah Jane and there'll be K-9 will come into it. And, you know, I'm going to give the nod to it. And then we'll have the Sarah Jane Chronicles. And you can watch all that. But if you want to, you can go back and watch all of her episodes and it'll enrich it and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it worked well.
When you were talking about the change, like when we got David Tennant and we normally had stuffy people, Tom Baker was a younger person for the Doctor.
Yes.
So he pulled that off splendidly. Not to mention, it was amazing seeing him in the anniversary episode with Matt and David and him at the end. All you were like...
As a curator, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Oh my God. I almost got one of those scarves. Almost. And then I asked myself, what...
Yeah, where would you wear it?
I did a Matt Smith, the 11th Doctor screwdriver. Mentioning that, what the heck is up with the screwdriver now?
Oh, the Sonic. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Let's jump to that because let's talk about the comparison because it's because you know obviously you came in with Tennant and we'll go back to 11 and we'll talk Jodie and Capaldi and stuff. But what is interesting is because I do think we have eras of Who, like we've had classic era, you know, ends with Sylvester McCoy, Seventh Doctor, and the film, which was interesting, New Who, and now we're really like into the third age with Shuti Gatwa and Millie Gibson. Firstly, before we get what you the 60th anniversary specials, how what were you, did you watch all, have you caught those? Because that was obviously Tennant coming back as a
of course,
yeah,
as a Tennant, did I watch the Tennant ones? Yes. Yeah, and, oh, I love the companion that they pick. And why, I'm swearing, names are just falling out my head like ridiculously. I loved that. And I wonder often, I'm wondering, did they pick up there because it was like the only companion left to pick up with? I mean, I guess they could have done Jones, but like, I feel like...
With Martha sort of has her own She was picked up a little bit with like Torchwood and some of the others. Like she joined UNIT, so they sort of. So yeah, I think you're right. Like Catherine Tate's Donna Noble was sort of like the only one to really tie up those loose ends. I have to admit, and I'm interested. I'm going to throw this out, and I'm happy for you to shout me down and give me a slap on this one. This is one of the only flaws I found with the I love the 60th anniversary specials. I thought they were great. I thought Tennant was great. I think Donna Noble's. I think you know Catherine Tate has been a really great companion. But she was left with this thing. If she remembers the Doctor, like it will kill her, and there'll be these massive repercussions. And I know they bring in her daughter. And there's this whole thing, you know, by saying, but the end of the episode, when they're just sort of like, oh, no, we don't have to worry about that anymore, because just like we can just shake it off. And you know, it was just sort of so, I felt kind of cheated in a weird way, because so much emphasis had been put on the impact of her having to forget the Doctor and the emotional impact, to not just to Tennant's Doctor, but also to like Bernard Cribbins's, you know, the granddad. And also, like, you know, as a viewer, I'm like, no, you've had all these massive journeys. Like, you know, this is Donna was the one that kind of brought Tennant's Doctor back in line. Like, you know, she sort of hammered him out a little bit. And so to have that was so heartbreaking. And then for them to sort of go, oh, no, you know, and not say it wasn't really, they tried to sort of like, they fix obviously that the you know, they've got a trans daughter, but this whole thing of going, we can just shake it off. We're women, we can shake it off. And I was just like, that feels like, so such lazy writing for something that was heartbreaking because of their relationship. I don't know. It just, I'm throwing it out there.
I have a few things. First of all, yes, it was very disappointing. Definitely wanted her daughter to have Time Lord energy and come back and do something.
Yeah.
And then we also have to think about how much Tennant and Catherine Tate probably cost them.
And yes, Disney, that's fair.
So, like, they were like, get rid of them. Get rid of their salaries as fast as we can. What did you say? Shake it off? Fine. Goodbye.
Yeah. That's fair. Yes. Yeah. That's a fair point. That's fair. Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting.
When Doctor Who was coming out with this, Disney was looking for possibly other people to purchase the entire company. I'm sure they wanted. Sorry, I just logistics of it.
No, it's a fair comment. Because those 60th ones, because those 60th ones cost money. I mean, you get like Neil Patrick Harris obviously coming as like the toy maker, and you go, like, so there's some big budgets and stuff. And
that CGI,
yeah, and that whole dance number to the Spice Girls, which was phenomenal.
And then you have to remember how much it costs to have the Spice Girls play in the background.
Exactly, yeah. So there's a lot of money spent on that. It was a good celebration. It was a real celebration, I think.
And I was thrilled to have Disney do it, because I'm not going to lie, I looked at this and I was like, yeah, there's no way the BBC's kicking out that cash. No, like, we have a whole year of television to do Doctor Who's part of it, okay?
Yeah. No, yeah, Disney looked at the budget and were like, oh, that's our catering budget. We'll add some more, don't worry. Yeah, it worked.
I care. They have some of the best catering out there. It's them and CBS.
Yeah. You're taken care of. So that's what's important. But let's jump to like Shooty before we get to Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday. Having sort of Shooty feels again like that shift. Like, you know, he feels like a Tennant, and that's why I liked it being Tennant to Shooty, because it felt like a handing off of the baton in a really good way.
I feel like it felt like equal energy, because Smith handing off to Capaldi was just sad. Oh. I mean, Smith was so energetic. I felt like he was he could do a Saturday morning cartoon show in real life. As real, and he could probably be the only person on the camera, and we was great for the kids, you know, great energy. He matched it, and then he's handing it off to who? Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, it was a great nod to going back to like who Doctor Who actually is, like when they first started off. But yeah, the energy between Ten and the new Doctor was perfect.
Yeah, Yeah.
It felt like that.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'd totally go because I wanted some more Smith energy. I'm not gonna lie.
It's interesting, yeah, because I've liked more, and I like Matt Smith. I did think, you know, he brought an interesting energy, and but I've recently just rewatched Capaldi from start to finish, the 12th Doctor.
I liked his storyline though. It was more pensive. Yeah, you had to really put your head around the and having the master be who the master was just worked great for Capaldi. That would not have worked with Matt Smith.
That's why I think this is why, and I completely agree with that. And I think this is something I think has been interesting is because Tennant was able to had that varying energy. Because I think, and this is why I think he's been so successful since he can do, you know, tense police dramas. He can be a villain. He can be a hero. He can do all kinds of things. And then he can do like kind of sort of like silly. And he can do Good Omens, which I think is also a fantastic show. But like you say, with Matt Smith, it was almost like it was always in like, you know, Top Gear all the time, and so everybody else had to be a bit less in order to, you know, for him to fill the screen. But with Capaldi, you could have Missy because she could be up there and be that energy, and sort of they worked. And I think she's fantastic. I think she's probably my favorite version of the Master, or
Oh my God.
the is it?
Yeah, no, best one ever. Yeah.
Yeah, Missy's amazing. Oh, she's so funny.
I am missing a few years of the classic, so like I did the first Doctor, second Doctor, Tom Baker, and then I was like, yeah, no, I'm done.
I wouldn't worry about it too much because I'm not going to lie. Like I've gone back and I've dipped into it, and you know, the first Doctor did a couple of stories, and you do you sort of go. I agree. After a while, you're a bit like, yeah, it's nice to sort of like homework or research, but I can't do those early Doctors. It's sort of the pacing's off. It looks awful.
That was just that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm
Yeah.
sorry now.
No, you're right. It's just, I do think there's you know there's a different energy. There's a modern energy. I don't think you could play some of those early Doctors. You know, I came in at McCoy. I think you know, I say Tom Baker works. But so what are your thoughts then? We're halfway through. Are you keeping up with the latest season?
Yep.
Okay, so we're halfway through, season one, third era, or season 14 for if you're counting. What are your thoughts then about what we've got so far this season?
Honestly, can the doctor have more time on screen? Like he's always gone half of the time. I'm like, what? Y'all just like, nah, we don't like paying him for this one. Or is he shooting another show we don't know about?
Yeah.
I swear he's like, I have other work to do. You know, I got other pages to memorize. Can't be here all the time. I do love how they did the normal. I don't know if I love it or if I kind of am annoyed by it at this point. I love how they did that thing where like the doctor is there for like the first part of the show and then it's like the companion like waste their life. Total waste. Every time there's somebody in the modern one that oh no, I don't think Eccleston did that during his. Did Rose ever waste her life?
No,
But like,
not till later. She did it with she there was a hot there was a similar thing with Tennant, and
yeah.
Amy Pond did it with
But y'all,
11.
they just waste their life. There's one thing to happen, and it's a great thing. But I mean, honestly, like, why?
Yeah.
I feel terrible saying that, but I'm like,
No, no,
you
no.
short Tom Moore's life. It's a very long time. There's a lot of regenerations. He got new regenerations. So a lot of regeneration time he has here. If anyone's gonna waste the life, it should be his.
Yeah, no, it'd be interesting. I mean, they have done it that way. Well, sort of done that way around with you know family blood. They did with Ten, didn't they? Where he sort of he became human and became a school teacher for a short time. That was a good way of doing it. But no, I
I mean,
agree. Actually, it's the one.
I don't mind that the master wasted his life at the end of time. No one
Yeah,
cares. He's
that's
evil.
different.
He wasted his.
No, I agree. It's funny because they get someone again with sort of like, you know, Shooty Gutwise energy, charisma, and screen presence, and then yeah, fourth or fifth episode in, you're sort of like, oh, he's not going to be there, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. I mean, it was still an interesting episode. I liked some of the you know, the creepiness of it. I thought it was good, but yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm interested. I'll see which side of the coin you're on. The first episode, Space Babies.
Gonna go there right after that.
I sat there. I was like, "Oh God! Like this is not good. Like this is their opening episode." I was really worried. I was like, "Oh, this feels silly beyond like what we've had." So I was. It was okay, but I was really like, "Oh no."
Okay, maybe it's because I'm a girl, but babies are adorable. So if I just watched it, I watched it twice just so I could see the babies. That was good enough for me. I was like, so they started off with this after they went from this amazing special and they started off with Space Babies. Okay. Well, dang.
Yeah.
Babies are cute though. So, I mean, if you're going to start with anything and you're like, let's not put the effort in, let's make this cute and fun and in true Disney style, let's not us forget who the parent company is. It is in true Disney style.
That's a very good point. Yeah. I think that was people's concern, wasn't it? It's like, is it leaning too much in the Disneyfication of the show? I would say that, you know, yeah, you see what you're saying. I don't know. I watched it and was like, this feels oddly out of place. I'm a massive fan of a show called Red Dwarf, which is a space sort of based comedy, and it kind of felt like.
Are there new episodes?
Yeah, well, the three new episodes come in next year as a final. So I'm very excited for three final episodes for Red Dwarf.
Okay, when they came out the last time, I was like, oh, everyone got real old.
Yeah,
even the AI isn't supposed to be getting old. He's a hard hologram. He does not age.
It's funny because Chris Barry's even said that. He plays Rimmer. He's sort of like, you know, yeah, you'd think they'd like, de-age me or something, like make me look good. But yeah, I think they've got that one more set of episodes. But it felt, the thing is, Space Babies felt like a modern right, Red Dwarf episode. Like, I was like, this feels weirdly Red Dwarfish than more than Doctor Who.
Now that you say it, oh my God. If there was some chicken vindaloo in the middle of that, some spicy vindaloo.
Well, that was the thing. You know, the boogeyman, the monster that was like the boogey monster. It felt like from series four, there's one called DNA where they make a vindaloo monster. And I was like, it looks like the vindaloo monster from Red Dwarf. And I was like, that's it. I can't unsee that anymore.
Okay. But the ending with the machine making the bogey monster, because apparently it's bogey. I was like, what? Okay, never mind. But then making that gave it a good who tie-in. It stayed true to his parentage. It was a science reason behind snot running the holes.
Yeah, no, it felt silly but sciencey. So I was kind of like, okay, I'll give it that. I'll give it that.
Okay, I don't understand. Saved the boogeyman. I'm sorry. I know it's one of the babies, but is it?
Yeah, that was a bit odd. Yeah, yeah. It kept giving me flashes of other things because you know when it was being sucked out to space and there was like the doctor and then the boogeyman was being sort of pulled apart and the snot was being pulled. Have you ever seen Alien Resurrection?
No, I have.
Okay, it was like there's a half human, half xenomorph kind of thing in that. And it gets sucked out the ship through this, like into space. And I was like, oh, I'm really getting like weirdly like odd references off this episode. So it kind of messed with my head.
All it made me thought is the ship got a cold and it just can't get that last loogie out.
Yeah,
and that's all. Like, yeah, I don't. I currently was suffering from sinus infection. This was not a good show to watch. And I was like, you know, if only I could blow my nose a little harder.
You can see that vacuum of space.
Maybe I have a whole stack of methane around him.
Yeah.
That the baby diapers.
Well, less let the less said about the propulsion of baby dinosaurs, the better. Yeah.
I was
Yeah,
like,
that was where I really rolled my eyes. I was like, oh no. Like, we're going to have a nappy joke at the end of an episode. Okay.
Yeah, well, but you know something? He made it feel true.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is where you make a good point about him, you know, kind of taking that weirdly step back in both Boom and in 73 Hours. When you're like, although I was eye rolling, I'm still watching and going, yeah, but I'm still really enjoying this Doctor. Like, he's making it watchable.
The information octave, and that's why the Boogie Monster was so scared. Which was funny to me because he's like, I had the inclination to run, and I'm like, well, I mean, I feel like run is the Doctor's tagline.
Yeah,
run. Yeah. I was like, so why is this like? Oh, now I get it. Okay. And yeah. As a writer, I immediately wrote that down and I was like, using that. let me fact check it. It is correct using that. Thank you.
I think often the thing is with the run, it's interesting, Doctor, because obviously you said like running is excuse the pun, it's a running gag throughout the series, obviously, isn't it, the running down corridors thing. But often I think he runs in order to give himself distance to think, and I think there's very few times when he runs out of like true fear. Like, you know, there's very few times where he's like, I'm actually legit scared. It's more a case of I need time to think of a solution.
It was the first time I ever recognized that running was not just from fear.
Yeah.
Because like when he said I'm scared, I immediately thought of Matt Smith. I'm like, how many times does it feel like he ran because he was just scared?
But, yeah.
Like, and then when he was like, no, I'm legit scared, I was like, wait, so all those other times you weren't legit scared?
Yeah.
Interest. When you went to the devil. Although the Lord, oh my God, that was scary in a way. I don't know why that was so scary to me. Or maybe it's because I love music.
Oh, the devil's got, well, yeah, I think that, yeah, there's some interesting, they've done some, that's what I think about this. You're talking about Maestro in the second episode stuff is, I forget the name of the who played Maestro, but, such a great performance, like you say, that this balance of like the, and this flamboyant, but insanely sinister throughout. I was like, all right, yeah, this is cool. Like, this is silly, but like, fun.
Also, kind of really scary because, I mean, the second one, we had the, is the second one, and he nods that something worse is coming. Mm. And Ruby in the snow. I was like, between these two things, is the Doctor surviving? I know he has to because, I mean, it's IP. There's no way Disney's letting go of that IP. I mean, after the bidding war for that, there's no way.
Oh,
there's
no. Yeah. No, we'll get into predictions actually in a second, because I think as you said about logistics and what's coming and what sort of Russell T. Davis has sort of suggested. It was Russell T. Davis that gave us, as you say, Torchwood and Sarah Chronicle Chronicles, and like, so he said, like, you know, it's called the Hooniverse. There's other stories to tell. So you're like, oh, well, who else? What else? What are we going to get? So there are going to be other shows and other things, which is kind of exciting. So,
I'm going to just be real annoying here.
Mm.
Please understand the Red, I just want to speak with Disney right now. Disney, please understand Red Dwarf has been running for so long that I think the actors have arthritis in both their knees. And mm-hmm. So when you get a sci-fi IP, don't do a Star Wars. Do a Red Dwarf. Because you're killing Star Wars. Do a Red Dwarf.
Yes.
You'd murder Marvel. Do a Red Dwarf here.
That's a really good, yes.
Who?
I'm 100% behind you on that. Exactly. Yeah, stick to what works. Do it well. Put more money into it. Do not try and deviate too much. And I do hope they sort of stick with it. I think because they don't own it 100%, you know, they are putting money in, they're doing distribution and stuff. But the company that does own it, the product is called Bad Wolf Productions, which is kind of cool. And I think they still have like a big chunk, so I think they'll hopefully be able to manage that. But the suggestion that I heard, and I don't know if this is complete nonsense because it was only a rumor thing, is following that the Mandalorian and Grogu are having their film, you know, that the sort of the Mandalorian series is running up to a you know, a feature. The suggestion was that there would be a lead up to, in however many seasons, a Doctor Who feature film.
No.
And I feel like
we have movie. Okay, there's a film, and that was terrible. So why would we do it again?
Yeah. Well, there's three. Technically, there's three films, because in the 1960s, they did another Doctor. They had Peter Cushing play. They did two stories from the first Doctor with Peter Cushing, and they're interesting. I wouldn't say I would recommend them. They're, you know, unless you are a fan of 60s British Hammer films, they have that very much that sense. But they're not great. And obviously, as you say, the TV film from 1996, which
I'm trying to exhume it.
Yeah, well, no, do you know, it's one of those things where I often have this memory and I go, oh, I think that was all right. I have flashes and go, I'm going to go back and try that. I'm going to go watch it. And then I do. And I go, like, oh, no, this was awful. And then about 4 years later, I'm like, was it that bad?
Oh, how many times I've watched so many movies because there were a couple of scenes that were great. And you rewatch it. And I'm like, it was a waste of time. Yeah. Again.
Yeah, that one scene was not worth the whole 2 hour experience.
I want to say, take our advice and skip them. Just skip the films. Although, I guess. Now, if Tenet was in the film, I'd go see it.
Well, this is it. I don't know. Like, you know, David Tennant has said he's retired, the character is done, and he's, you know, moving on. So, you know, we'll see. But I don't know. We'll see what comes with the future of the Hooniverse. But, you know, I'm feeling more confident. I think with each episode, it's become more confident. But I want more shooty. I want more sort of like this Doctor. Because I think he's great. He's a really interesting kid.
I mean, I think I didn't really notice until he was missing how good he is. I loved Ruby. Ruby pulled the whole thing off. She did a great job. She solved an entire mystery using the scary parts of her life. Perfect. So many nods back to She Waited. So many nods back to Amy Pond. So many. So, I mean, like what Amy Pond did with her life. I mean, it wasn't great because, you know, she was a singing telegram girl.
Yes.
It's like this girl was holding coats because she wanted to solve a mystery. She was waiting. But yeah. Lots of nods back, but I recognize how I missed him being on screen, how energetic, how he fills the entire screen, and he really makes those stories, especially Space Babies, because that was hard to pull off.
I'm not disagreeing there. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure when he got the script, he was like, what? Park there.
This is that first episode? Okay. I'll trust you, Russell. That's fine. Well, I want to quickly go back to Jodie in a minute, but one thing that has changed, and you know, it doesn't bother me, but someone who is a Who fan who I was talking to recently said it annoys them, because they're a cosplayer, and so they're like, you know, you have a definitive look for like 10, you have a definitive look for 11, you have a definitive look for, you know, all these previous Doctors. You can cosplay as each of those Doctors, but you say, yeah, but you can't cosplay as, you know,
a fashion African-American man.
Yeah, because because there's nothing definitive there. Do you know what I mean? Like, he looks great in every episode. Like, the costuming like department, I must be having a ball because they can do different things, but there's no like definitive look, you know, to go, oh yeah, I'm going to be that Doctor. And I don't know how that, you know, weirdly, I'm like, is that a detriment or is that a positive? I'm still undecided.
Love it. Mm. Honestly, if we think about it, I feel like it's too early to define him anyway.
Mm.
And everything around him is so large and colorful, or except for that one It's so very large and colorful. Wouldn't it look weird if he's the same thing that looks the same in semi-drap?
That is, yeah, you're right. He's the first Doctor where it's not his personality to wear the same set of clothes. So
I assume that at some point, when the really settled into the role, they'll probably give him something to wear. I assumed I'm probably dead wrong, but I'm loving it.
Oh no,
I
yeah,
mean,
he's interesting. I like it. I think he looks great. I mean, he's one of the, I like the fact that they made it period specific as well. Like, because they'll often do that with like the companion. You know, they'll be like, oh, the companion's going to be like historically accurate, but then the doctor's walking around in like a suit and a trench coat. And you're like, that's weird. All right.
I think, and also, would it even match his personality to not be, would it match his personality to be outdressed by his companion?
Oh,
I think even
no,
would
yeah.
have to make a joke, he would make a joke about himself not getting dressed.
Yes, no,
I mean,
that's a very good point.
if you think about the Doctor as a character, how many times do you think the Doctor has seen the Beatles? I mean, this Doctor was like, this is a thing. I'm getting dressed. I'm
Yes.
going to a people.
Yeah.
Right there, like, yes, I would get dressed to go see the Beatles. And I'm not a huge Beatles fan, and I'd still get dressed.
No, that's a good point. I like the point you've made where actually where like no, his personality is like, you know, no one's gonna be more fashionable than him. Like he is, you know, he's a striking gentleman and he's gonna sort of he's a dandy and that sort of thing. Which I think is actually which is to the doctor, like the dude's a dandy. He's like, you know, he's gonna be the coolest one in the room. One more doctor to touch on. We've talked about Modern Who, we've talked, you know, we've sort of touched on Capaldi a bit, but like they already sort of, you know, the swing that was Jodie Whittaker, which is interesting because my first introduction to Jodie Whittaker is through drama. Like she's done some really cool police dramas and several other sort of shows, and she's a fantastic actress. Like she's done some, she was in Broadchurch with David Tennant, so she's, you know, I know her from some really tense kind of in, you know, intense kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, cool, great actress, happy for her to be the Doctor. Unfortunately, I think her era is possibly the low point of modern Who, but I don't think it's her fault in by any stretch. It's a really odd set of series.
Okay, so the first time I was ever asked to be on a Who podcast was doing the Jodie era. And when they attempted to tackle racism, that was interesting.
Yeah.
And they did a good job, but there was so much I was like, couldn't be said and can be done and can be everything. Like, wow. I loved, I'm gonna stay positive. So I absolutely loved almost all of her companions. Those were cool. The police officer, the cat, the black guy and his dad, the motivation they had for making sure that things were right and ethical. That was amazing. I really liked them. It felt like they really did carry a good amount of that story.
I was glad when they whittled it down, though. When there was lots of them, I felt it got, you know, I think they got lost in it. I preferred it when they were whittling down. So when it was just like Yaz and the Doctor, it felt a little bit more, oh, good, I can follow these two, and I like their relationship. But
I guess it's probably because I wasn't a huge fan of yet. So I mean,
yeah.
it was have two people on screen. And not have to think about all of them. And I mean, let's think about also how hard that was for the writers in the writers' room. Every person got out safe and every person did what they were supposed to do and make sure that every component of that script worked for each and every person. That was hard.
Yes, to balance that.
Needed to give her so many companions.
It just felt weird that how, you know, I was because I thought it's the first female doctor and you're gonna give her a lot of companions, and I was just like, this feels like you don't fully trust that she can carry it. And I'm like, but we've seen her do really good stuff elsewhere. Why not give her the full screen? Like it felt padded for me. I always think when there's when, you know, when they got all the companions. Which is, yeah, I found it odd, but.
Which is an odd thing to say, because Tennant had all of his companions at the end when they were towing Earth home, and yet we weren't noticing how we were just happy to have them all.
But they all had legacy. That's the thing, isn't it? Because you were like, as you were saying before, it's like it was fist pump, and you're like, yes, they're all back, and they're gonna, you know, it's like a crossover event. But yeah, I think they come in, there was too much. I think it's odd, because I actually legitimately like Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. And I'm still secretly hoping that, you know, David Tennant has said, no more, he's done. Peter Capaldi has said, no more, he's done. You know, he's too old, and he's sort of like, you know, I'm done. I don't know about Matt Smith. He keeps. Well, Eccleston has said an awful lot of things about Russell T. Davis and the troubles he went on whilst he was on set. So he's not coming back. And I think, you know, Matt Smith keeps trying to crack Hollywood and then makes bad choices about what films he does. Morbius.
Dragons right now?
That's true. I haven't seen it, so I couldn't comment on his performance in that. But I kind of... If they did a crossover and they brought back Jodie Whittaker under Russell T. Davis, I think she could do really good. I think it could be the best time for her would be under Russell T. Davis rather than what's it, Chibnall.
Oh, wait. I also have to mention that the way that Davies is setting up a storyline. It's at this point, when you say he's coming back, you already know that you're looking for Easter eggs. And every episode, you're rewatching and being like, what did they say?
Yes.
Is this be the one?
Right in the notes. What's gonna
happen? Is that it? I mean, even during like when Ruby at the end said when I was the newest episode, when I was young, I could make it snow. And you're like, oh, I gotta watch it again. I watched it 3 times just to make sure. I'm like, am I missing something about the snow? Am I missing something about her mother? I still think it's something to do with that neighbor. Because she comes out and she was like, oh dear, how's it? I was like, but then again, that's just me.
No. I think you're right. I think, you know, the neighbors. There's the woman. There's the old woman that keeps appearing in every episode in a sort of in background roles, and you know, she's sort of taking on more and more bits. Because obviously, Millie Gibson is only in this first season. Like, she's leaving, and she's due to be replaced. So we're going to get a resolution to whatever this is, you know, pretty soon. So. But yeah, Russell T. Davis is good at this. I just watched, you mentioned Bad Wolf. I watched the end of series one today with Chris Ferguson and Billy Piper. Exactly as you said, like, you know, the story components, this whole thing with Bad Wolf, and then it's her at the end of it, and it's sort of like, it's cool. It really works. And he is really good at that. The only thing I'm going to say, this is my thing. I'm throwing this out now, because I think Millie Gibson's been good, and I think 73 Yards showed how good she can actually carry an episode, and I think she's done really well. However, she still comes across like 50% Rose, 50% Clara Oswald. Like, she doesn't feel like a new companion. She feels like a composite of old companions a little bit at the moment.
I think, honestly, like, when we first met Amy Pond, it took us a minute to, like, actually get a personality for that character. Mm-hmm. As a writer, it takes about 4 chapters for the reader to know who your character is. Sometimes it takes 4 chapters for the freaking writer to know who your character is. So, like, when you pick up a book, please, hang in with everyone. So that's one of the reasons, like, when I saw her, I was like, oh, is she acting like Rose on purpose? Because there are some characteristics from the Rose character that, like, there are some motions from the Rose character that she definitely does.
Yes.
But then, like, this is also a big coup for everyone involved on the money side. So it's probably best to guarantee that people like the character. So that's a lot of pressure on her. Can she find her own personality? Is she going to be allowed to get her own personality if she's only staying for one season? Probably not. I feel like we'll get more of it. I mean, we definitely got more of it in the 73 arcs.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's only been a couple of episodes, so let's give her till at least six.
Well, we've only got eight for this series. This series is only going to be eight episodes long, so it's, you know, that's...
Tell at least six?
No, eight episodes for this this series, and then Christmas special. So we haven't got much to go, but yeah.
I mean, we saw steps in the 73. So I'm saying give her two more episodes. I understand there's only two more episodes, and then like hopefully her personality shines through in 7 and 8. Like. What? It's a buildup of character too. Wouldn't that be nice? A buildup of the story and the character?
Hopefully. I think it'd be nice. Hopefully she'll shine through and then I can go back and, as you say, in doing so, I can reassess those first episodes and be like, oh, I see what she's doing. Okay. I'm cool. Yeah. It's good.
And she actually knows, I wonder if she's, well, it's television, so it's a week ahead. She probably already knew what the next episode was going to look like anyway. Maybe you want to make sure you don't give anything away. Who knows what's going through her mind? We're great. Yeah. I cannot wait end of season one, and then we'll find out everything that she thought and wanted to say that's not included in her non-disclosure agreement.
Yes, she can come out that first interview, but you can say all these things now. Yeah.
Yes.
No.
Like, this is what was on. So this is what was going through my mind. And they're like, see, now that makes sense is why she was doing this on camera.
Yeah. In Russell T. Davies, I trust. I think he's adding bits up. There's something coming, which is kind of cool. And I am excited for that.
Cool. You're probably like, well, Nona has one of the worst interviews. It's just everywhere.
No, that's cool. It's all, well, it's timey-wimey. It's all over the place. It's got Doctor Who energy. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
And she's like, talking about the money, the producers, the writer room.
Well, the writer's room is interesting because it's, you're right, but because we approach it different over here. I think in you know, it's not so much as a writer's room because obviously, you know, like they have guest writers and Stephen, but they have the showrunner. So, you know, although you had like Stephen Moffat came back to do Boom, he's still like, you know, still have like Russell T. Davies, and like you say, there's producers and there'd be studio notes saying like, well, you've got to do this, we've got to do that, that's got to be mentioned, this character's got to appear. Da 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 da, like go, write that, but you've got to include all this stuff. So I can imagine that's quite difficult to satisfy everybody, you know, and get it to screen.
So what they're making right here is called television pizza or television ice cream.
Yes.
You can't do much. And I mean, honestly, how upset were we when we found out what platform it was going to be on? So yeah. They also don't want to get it wrong.
Yes. No, I agree with that. I definitely feel that there's, yeah.
Yeah, so like, and you under, like the actors and the actresses are the reason that we will judge right or wrong. And probably not as much as the script, but like, we'll be like, okay, the script, maybe for this one wasn't that great, maybe that one wasn't that great, but it's their interpretation of how that script is done with the direction of the director that is going to be how we judge. So wouldn't it be better and safer to play something that you already know everyone likes?
Yes. And I think you're right. I definitely think there's elements of that. I think, you know, because having seen some of the Eccleston stuff as I've done over the last sort of couple of weeks and stuff, I feel nods and, you know, like you say, where Russell is, T. Davis is pushing things out in some places, but staying safe in others, which I think is a very good shout, as you say, you know. It's kind of re-establishing an audience with certain people and a younger audience as well, isn't it? And that's the other thing as well. Like, it's, you know, people that came
and
on
it's hard.
Go on.
Hard to get a younger audience nowadays. So, like, yeah. You got to do what they want. Anyway, I'm sorry. Let's go back to talking about the show and not about the politics and logistics behind it.
Yeah, no, it's all interesting. I love all of it. I was my interesting. We will wrap up soon, but let's go. So I'm gonna ask a couple of questions in quickly on this. So I think I can guess who your favorite doctor is.
What if I said seven?
Yeah, that's out of nowhere. You'd be like, number three, and you're like, oh, Christ. Yeah, so, you know, I think David Tennant is a very solid choice. I think he reestablished the show and everything. Favourite companion?
Oh, Donna Noble, though. Just because she became the Dr. Donna.
Yeah.
Oh my God, but then I liked her. Yeah, I'm sticking with Donna. I'm sticking with Donna.
Good choice. Yeah. Catherine Tate, Donna Noble, great choice. I think she was different from everything we'd had before. I think she was... which is why I enjoyed it.
I love the comedic timing. That was amazing. Although Rory was good too. No, I'm sticking with Donna. I'm sorry.
That's good. No, stand by your guns. If you could choose, I'm not going to say favorite episode because that shifts. So I'm going to give you a couple of choices. So you know, right now I'm going to say, cool, let's watch some Doctor Who. What episode would you, what episode would you be leaning to? If you remember.
When with Tennant first meets Noble, hilarious with the fat.
Oh, adipose. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, oh, the one with Martha Jones where she ends up wasting most of her life. And then that one line in the end, if you ever look in the corner and the mirror, corner of your eye, you will get a glimpse of my sister. She's trapped there for eternity. Oh, she's like, and then he's like, we wanted to live forever. So he made it so we could live forever. Mwah.
Yeah. Oh, goosebumps. It's reminding me of that. Yes.
Ah, that's just the best. I think that's it for me. No, there's got to be one more. Oh, but I don't know how to explain that one. It's under Capaldi where he gets trapped in and he has to, like, repent for all of his sins.
Oh, yes. The Heaven and Hell double bill where he's punching his way through the diamond wall. Love that.
And that, like, when I first watched it, I hated it. And then, like, the more I watch it, the more I'm like, this is amazing. This is the Doctor against himself and his own thoughts. And this is the Doctor against what he did in the war in a way. And this is the Doctor. This is the just Doctor, like everything I've missed, is kind of hints to right there. Okay, now I'm done.
Yeah, no, I love that. That was one of my favorite Capaldi episodes. That just sort of, like, you know, because he's doing it to get to Clara as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's that friendship is so sort of strong, which is, yeah, it's such a good episode. No, it's great. I loved it. I've enjoyed this, and I do. I love the fact this is going to sound so daft, but it's so nice because of, you know, to part one of my little Doctor Who trip, talking to an American for, you know, really, because it's such a British thing that I'm so used to be just going, you know, you people I know that enjoy Doctor Who. So to know that it's international and that it's brought the sort of, like, people from all over the world together, it's kind of cool. I love that about geekdom and I love that about fandom. So I'm so glad I started with you, Wilnona. It's been awesome. It's been amazing talking about it.
Thank you. You know, now I'm going to go get me some hot, spicy chicken vindaloo.
Go for it. That's it. That's it. Go try some Red Dwarf. That's what everyone wants. Right. But before we go, you have done an awful lot. You've got a lot going on. Where can people find you? There are links down below to the two websites, but where can people find you and your stuff? And if they want to find out more about what you're doing?
So we have a www.andithoughtladies.com, and he probably has www.andwethought.com. And I Thought Ladies has, like, the cute, cool version of everything we do with our podcast and stuff like that. And if you want to continue this conversation, you can definitely watch Whovian versus Whovian on our side, where we have a electric engineer who actually builds his own lightsabers.
Nice.
And a talking about the differences between the 10th and the 11th Doctor and which one is actually the best.
That's got to flip between them. That's cool.
Yeah, that was fun. And at andwethought.com, you can find out, like, literally everything we do, and it's a lot. So I'm not even going to start talking about it.
No. Yeah, just go to the links below. So much stuff. All the books, all the podcasts, all the bits and pieces, the magazine, as you said, all on there. Go check it out.
So if you want to look, but I look like in a bathing suit. You can find that out there.
It's all on there. Everything. It's all out there. But yeah, no, this has been fantastic. So yeah, Wilnona, thank you very much for coming on. And ladies and gentlemen, yeah, go check it out. But for us, If you like what we do, leave a review. Go check out our Patreon, www.patreon.com/20cgmedia. Loads of stuff on there, loads of exclusive content. And we will be carrying on. Next episode, I'll be talking to Steve from Comics, the Comics in Motion Collective, who is I'm not saying an older gentleman, but he's more of a classic Whovian. He's coming in from an earlier period, which is why it's going to be interesting. A little diversion. And then we'll continue up to our 200th episode, where I'll be joined by my brother from another mother, Julian Darius, co-host of Stories Out of Time and Space, just for us to have an ultimate Doctor Who conversation. But for now, well, Nona, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on. Really enjoyed chatting with you. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. And we shall see you again soon.